You know I'm going to start this homily by saying, stay awake. So I best do what I can to make sure that you do. Today is the beginning of the church's new year. Our liturgical year, our church year, is 4 weeks in advance of the calendar that we use nowadays, the Gregorian calendar. Now, in the last 12 months, we've been listening to the Gospel of Matthew predominantly through the year. This year, year B, we listen to Mark's Gospel predominantly through the year. And next year we will have Luke, and then we go back to Matthew again. So Mark's Gospel, I always think it's helpful at the beginning of the new year to know exactly who these characters are, who they were writing to, why and when. And then when you hear the readings from Mark's Gospel throughout the year, you'll understand a little bit more. The first thing we can say about Mark's Gospel is that we actually don't know who the author is. We have an idea. We have an idea that it was probably, and most scholars tend to agree, that it was probably a fellow by the name of John Mark. As happens in Scripture, once something significant happens in a person's life, names change, like Simon Peter, for example. So John Mark, we're told in Acts 12:12, his mother's house was used as a prayer centre in Jerusalem. And Mark, who was John, has probably picked up the sayings of Jesus because he kept so close to the apostles. We also believe through research that he was St. Peter's interpreter. So therefore he would have had a couple of languages, not just Hebrew or Aramaic, the language of Jesus, but he would have been what we say is Hellenistic. He would have been Greek as well. So the scriptures are written in Greek and then they were translated by St. Jerome in Jerusalem into the Latin. We also believe that Mark's Gospel was probably written in Rome while he was there with Peter, pulling all his sources together. So therefore, it was written for people who were predominantly not Hebrew, not Jews, what we would call Gentiles. It was also written at a time, most probably just before 70 AD, before Jerusalem was levelled by Titus and the temple in the city destroyed. But the persecutions had begun of the Christians, and it seems that Mark is writing his gospel as an encouragement. So he keeps saying in this gospel, stay awake. Jesus will return, but we don't know when. These things will pass, these persecutions will pass. Now, the Hebrew mind or the Mediterranean and Middle Eastern mind is very different than our mind. We think to the future all the time. We're constantly down the track. Some of you have already switched off from what I'm saying and are probably concentrating on what are you going to cook for Christmas Day, who's going to be there, what are you going to feed them, and you're going through your shopping list, all that sort of stuff. The Middle Eastern mind, the Mediterranean mind, doesn't do that so much. It concentrates on the here and now. What's going on right now? They also do that in a sense of reflecting on the past. Where have I come from? We focus very much on where are we going to. So there's a little bit of slim dusty in the beginning of Advent, I think. Just a little bit, because we could say that Advent, at the beginning of Advent, there's a little bit of looking forward, looking back. So what about the here and now? That's where Advent really, what do we say, where the rubber hits the road, the here and now. Don't worry about the future. Matthew, in his gospel, tells us, why worry about the future? It's got enough worries of its own. It'll take care of itself. Learn from the past, but the worrying about the past, there's nothing you can do about it. Absolutely nothing. So learn from it, sure. But don't live in the misery of the past, especially if there have been negative things that have happened to you. And I can give you a really good example of something that's just horrible and negative, almost in the here and now, but it's technically in the past. So this little comment is directed to one little couple in particular who I married last weekend. And the person who did the hair for the bride had the keys to the bridal suite and then went back to the bridal suite and stole all the credit cards numbers, and then used them and cleaned out their bank account. Like that's, I find that really very difficult to grasp, but that's not going to hold them back. You know, at the start of Advent, with a horrible, horrible thing like that, the betrayal of trust, this was a friend, allegedly. So all of that that comes with theft takes away the joy of that moment. But there's a bigger joy. This couple just got married. So they're still in the honeymoon phase. And they will. They will conquer that. Are they going to focus too much on the future? Let's just live in the here and now. Because it's in the here and now that we get the courage to take our next steps into the future. We start to understand things a little better. I don't know how you rebuild trust like that, for example. I'm not sure. I really would have to think about that. And I know that with this couple, for example, like all of you here, if somebody broke into your house and stole your precious things, if they had knocked on your door and said, look, I'm absolutely destitute, I have nowhere to live, I have no food, I have no money, you would put your hand in your pocket or over your heart and you would do some good for them. I know you would, because that's what we're like. But the act that is so much bigger than the generosity is harder to wash out of that bad taste out of our mouth. But it can be done, and that's kind of what Advent's like. It's the shocking us back to reality. Where is God in the here and now in my life? And Mark's really good at it because he's short and punchy in his gospel. It's the shortest of them. It's the oldest of the gospels. So therefore, historically, it would be more accurate because it hasn't been tampered with. It hasn't been flavoured by the spiritual experiences or not of the author. By the time you get to John's gospel, what he could say in 3 or 4 words, he says in 3 or 4 paragraphs. Mark gets to the point, and I kind of like that. Because I think the other evangelists who wrote as well, the gospels, liked it too, because they all based their gospel on Mark's to a very great degree. Each of the gospel writers has their own symbol. The symbol for Mark is the lion. They're all winged symbols. So it's the winged lion. For those of you who've been to Venice, you'll see the two lions there above the basilica, the winged lions. St. Matthew's is a winged man, an angel. St. John's is the eagle soaring. And St. Luke's is always the winged oxen. But in this year of Mark, at the beginning of Lent, put all the oxen and the eagles and the angels aside, and you'll notice that there's no mention of Christmas in Mark's gospel. He starts his gospel with Jesus at about 30 years of age, being baptized and beginning his mission. He is not interested in the birth, the first coming of Jesus. He is interested in the second coming of Jesus. So Advent also, we focus, in one sense, our lives on, certainly there's going to be a little baby in swaddling clothes, we get all that, but it really draws our attention to the second coming of Jesus. That's why he keeps saying 3 times, stay awake, because we actually don't know. And what do we do while we're staying awake? Well, don't get all precious about the future and don't get all misery on the past. Look for his presence here and now. And the thing that gives us a reality check on his presence here and now is something that defines Christians from all other faiths. And that is actually hope. We have hope. And hope, I would say to you, as you prepare for Christmas, hope, as you're stirring your Christmas puddings or making your Christmas cakes, the most important ingredient that a Christian uses when thinking about the birth of Jesus and his second coming is hope. That ingredient allows us to conquer all and to recognise God's presence in all.